Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And we do that on Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. and 1 a.m. on this fine radio station, as well as we podcast these programs. I have gotten into the fray in that regard, so I'm happy about that because now more people are able to hear what we're doing, and that's what it's all about. And we encourage you to go to our podcast locations, and they are not only the radio show's page of richarddugan.com, also on the homepage where you see two SoundCloud playlists, one for 2018 and one for 2019. And also go to SoundCloud, as I said. We are on Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, as well as on Stitcher. That was one of the other ones. And so, Spotify and iTunes, TuneIn Radio, a lot of different places that we're trying to expand. We encourage you to go there, listen to the entire interview. Just because you're listening to the radio broadcast doesn't mean you're hearing it all. I can guarantee you of that. And it's all based upon our guests' availability, and we certainly hope for lots of good information as we continue here in our program. Today's program also, we encourage you that if you like what we're doing here, if this resonates with you, please, if you can, support us financially. We have a PayPal account, and there's a link on the homepage as well as on the missions page at richarddugan.com. And then when you're listening to the interviews on the playlist through SoundCloud in particular, there's a little grocery card in the upper right-hand corner when that file is playing. That is a link to our guest's website. Other people use it to sell you something. We have nothing to sell. We are just offering these up. We lay out this smorgasbord, as we say quite often, and we ask you to join us. We also ask you to join us, both us, me, Tell Me Your Story, and my guest today. He's returning, a regular, actually, here on the program. It's nice to have Jonathan Goldman back with us to talk today about a very special event, and it's the 17th annual World Sound Healing Day. And on this day, thousands of people throughout our planet, in hundreds of different cities and countries will sound with an encoded with energy of love and compassion, sending a sonic Valentine, if you will, to the Gaia Matrix, our beloved Mother Earth, with the intention of raising the consciousness of all living beings. And you'll want to join the event from the 14th on the 14th of February. That's coming up here very shortly. So we encourage you to check that out. Go to worldsoundhealingday.org and you'll be able to find out about how you can help to heal our planet, heal our waters, and raise our consciousness. Jonathan, thank you. I've wanted to do this for the last 6 or 7 years. Every time I see this thing pop up in my emails, I'm going, I got to get this guy on. And it's like, oh, but I've already got interviews all the way through February. So this year I said, I'm going to make a space for him. Thank you for joining us and talking about this here in the next hour.
Richard, I am so very grateful for the opportunity to do this because it's, on a level, it's so important. We'll talk about that. I hope the hows and whys of World Sound Healing Day's creation. But as you know, I'm a writer, I'm a teacher, I've got, 25 award-winning CDs, et cetera, and yet, which are related to another website altogether and all that stuff, and yet I feel this is one of the things that really has been a calling for actually close to the past 20 years in terms of what's been going on, and I think now, more than ever, we need World Sound Healing Day.
I mean, and we could even go down a nice laundry list of the reasons why we need a Sound Healing Day, why we need to reconnect. Honestly, we talked about this on this program over and over and over again. Reconnect with Mother Earth. Not necessarily, but certainly wouldn't hurt World Healing Day as far as the efforts going forth. But also in terms of observing nature and using nature as our example of how to live our lives. That seems to be a message that's coming through. Is that what you're hearing as well, and what you're also talking about?
I mean, certainly, yes. And it's just so interesting because 5 minutes before I was supposed to call you, I got a phone call from a fellow who, among other things, used to be the Peter Gabriel's manager and the Rolling Stones manager, and ran for Senate and all that stuff. And he's a lovely being, and we were talking about this whole situation of what's going on. And I said, you know, I think from my perspective, the solution to all that is going on is that we really, as a planet, need to be in a state of oneness, which doesn't mean that we need to all believe the same thing or be the same thing, but on a quantum level, you know, from the stardust that makes up, you know, distant galaxies to our own molecules, we're made of the same stuff, and we're interconnected. We're interconnected with each other. If we only spent a moment thinking and becoming aware of that, and then you realize, okay, if you're interconnected, then you want to treat the next person in a kindly, good manner. You don't want to take advantage of him. You don't want to be greedy just because you can. You don't want to step on him. And just because you can, you don't want to leave your footprints on the planet, so that they basically turn the grass to mud.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with mud, but if we basically just start really decimating everything, oh.
Yeah, and you know, you use an interesting phrase there, and I put this forth quite often when talking, especially about the scientific community and what it's discovered and what it's doing and so forth. And I always put forth this very simple question to just about everything that we choose to do, and that is, just because we can, does that mean we should? You know, just because we can split the atom, does that mean we should? Just because we can... just because we can, what's the phrase I want here? split the genes and all of those kinds, like this one, what is it? The guy in China who is now, you know, I mean, this guy could go, he could lose his life because he went down that road. Just because we can, does that mean we should, do that so that people won't get AIDS? They'll be immune to it and so on and so on and so on. I mean, that's, to me, that's the prime source. So here we are talking about this very special day that's coming up on the 14th of February, you know, World Healing Day. And I'll even throw that question out to this. Just because we can celebrate and participate in World Sound Healing Day, does that mean we should? Oh, my answer to that is yes.
Well, you know, it's really made me think about this. I mean, you know, it's so interesting because what you said has been, if you like, a really primary aspect of my belief system for many, many decades now. You know, the reality of, you know, just because we may have either the physical or technological ability to do something, you know, should we do it? I mean, that's that's the primary question that we should be asking ourselves. You know, should we do it? Is it in alignment with, if you like, you know, nature? Is it alignment with all that is beneficial for us? And, you know, this is the question, you know, should we try to, if you like, from my perspective, shift and raise, and I'll use the word raise, and open the consciousness of all sentient beings, but mostly the human race, so we begin to realize that we've got to take care of each other in order for our planetary systems to survive. And I think, from my perspective, yes, indeed, as well. Mm-hmm. I have a son who is going to law school now, and it's a lovely being, just really a lovely being. We teach together sometimes, and he's... this cracks me up, but he literally is attending the number one environmental law school in the country. It's in called Lewis and Clark, but he just started there the first space law society, and that's what is space law. Well, space law is going to be what happens if we can go into the moon or into one of the asteroids. You know, can we claim it as our own and take the resources and use it, which is the basis of so much science fiction. But one of the things that when he was home during the holiday season, I apologized to him, and I said, listen, I'm really sorry that we have left the Earth in such a mess for your generation and the generations to follow. Mm. And it's really true, because, you know, from a Native American concept, and I'm not saying the Native Americans are, you know, stellar beings or whatnot, but there's that concept that, you know, you want to leave the Earth in a level, pristine level for the next seven generations. And it seems like just so many of the people in power these days don't give a hoot about what's even happening to this generation.
Well, I tell you, it raises another question. And you know, you talk about how you have a son, and that's a wonderful thing. My parents gave birth or brought into existence six people who have gone on to have their own children and so forth, with the exception of myself. And one of my sisters, the other sisters, they've married into a family already, or they then created their own. My brother has, a stepdaughter. I have no children, but I have to say that with the way things have been going, and trying to stay optimistic and not get too pessimistic and cynical, but I even asked the question, and I've posed this question quite honestly on the air before on the program. Just because we can procreate, does that mean that we should continue to do so? Does man really deserve to continue on? Look at the mess he's made. I mean, what you said to your son kind of permeates that a little bit. I mean, you apologize, that's great, but what is he going to have to look forward to, you know, in the next 20, 40, 60 years? Unless something drastically changes. And at the same time, I then also acknowledge that a lot of times the information that we receive through all of the different sources sometimes gets to be a bit exaggerated. It's not as bad as they're telling us, but they want to make it as dramatic as possible, because if it bleeds, it leads, as the news industry lives by that credo.
Yeah, sure. Richard, I'm getting close to being in my 70s. Not yet, but close enough so that I the more I know, the less I know. So I feel like I know very little. So what you just said is, you know, there may be exaggerations at certain levels, and you know, there may be things. I mean, what is the greatest way that you can manipulate consciousness? Through fear.
Yeah. But that's not the direction that, of course, we want to go. We want to change and lift a consciousness, not just through love, but through. I love the things that Greg Braden says when we have him on the program. But one of the things that has stayed with me for so long is the whole aspect of raising the consciousness through cooperation as opposed to through competition. I mean, I love the statistic that he throws out that has been scientifically proven over and over and over again, that the level of and the quality of productivity through the process of competition versus cooperation is the competition end of it. The quality is so low, whereas in cooperation, not only is the productivity high, but the morale of the people participating in a cooperative endeavor is so incredible. That's why. I don't know if you've ever experienced these places or not, but these new work hubs that have been built all over the country, where you have people who can do this, they're entrepreneurs, and they all meet in a central location, and they're all doing different things, okay? And yet they come together, and they might collaborate, and one person is doing one thing, and another person is doing another. These two people get together, and, I do this, and, oh, really? Well, I do this, and, wow, what if I was to incorporate what you're doing into what I'm doing in some way, shape, or form? And what you've got a third possibility here. And then
right, it becomes a 1+1=3 phenomenon.
Exactly. Not that I want to go down that road of whole math. Years ago, I heard about whole math, and it wasn't 2+2=4. It's 2+2 is, children, let's sit and discuss what 2+2 is. Because if we'd used that form of math, we would have never gone to the moon, I can guarantee you, let alone gotten back.
Mm-hmm.
But it is one of those things where we we're not trying to force anything on anybody. But by the same token, we're not real happy in the sense that things could be a whole lot better for everybody if, and then you have World Sound Healing Day that is there to help to do that. And people, they're going to make their choices. We talk about choices on this program. So what sounds are we going to be utilizing on the 14th of February, and how will we utilize those sounds?
Can I first answer with a why?
Okay. And why?
Because Richard, close to 20 years ago, I was in a really deep state of meditation, and this inner voice said to me, okay, you've spent the last 20 years bringing awareness of how sound can be used to heal the physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual body of the individual. And I'll be glad to talk more about that. But this voice continued, now it is time to incorporate and include using self-created or whatever type of sounds to basically raise the consciousness of the planet and heal the planet. And I said, oh, that's great. That's great. That sounds like a cool thing. How do I do it? And then transmission ended or whatever it was, because they didn't, you know, if you like, they perhaps gave me a bit of an idea, but they didn't tell me how to do it, so I had to figure it out. And I thought, okay. And at the time, I was cooperatively working with a couple of other really well-known people in the sound field. And they said, hey, let's get a day when all these people make a sound together with a combined consciousness, because it's my perspective that sound, particularly sacred sound, if you like, is an intentionalized sound, which is why, for example, in all the different traditions, you have sound being the first creative force in the universe, and, you know, you have basically almost all prayers are vocalized, and whether they're whispered, spoken, chanted, or sung, you know, prayers are vocalized. Why? Because sound amplifies the power of prayers. And of course, there's been a lot of data in terms of why prayers actually work and change. And once again, these global meditations could be considered prayers. And, you know, if you add the element of sound, you get a phenomenon that is extremely powerful. So I said, okay, you know, what if we chose a day and we sent a sound of love and projected the energy of love onto the sound to the planet? I had people all over the planet, so you got that, not only 1 + 1 = 3, but, you know, how many thousand plus how many thousand equals an exponential amount of energetics. And I thought, well, gee, Valentine's Day seems like a good day to do that, because, you know, people are working with the energy of love anyway. And the sound that we work with is the sound ah. And you say, well, why ah? And, you know, there are a lot of different sounds of love, but, you know, almost in any tradition, if you walk up to somebody and go, ah, they're probably going to think it's, you know, that you mean something that you like, that really resonates and feels good and you're in appreciation of. And that seems to be the sound of the heart chakra. And as I'm saying that, you know, that cut for chakra dance, mm-hmm. which is, could we listen to that? Because that's got my dear friend Sarah Benson, who passed on to the, if you like, angelic realms, but she said at one point, the true sound of healing is love. And that's, this recording starts mostly with the ah sound. So can we listen a couple of minutes to that?
Absolutely. Here we are.
Thank you.
Joining us, that is Chakra Dance. We're talking with Jonathan Goldman. We're talking about the 17th annual Sound Healing Day, and we're very excited about promoting that this year. The World Sound Healing Day, February 14th. You can become a part of a sonic co-creator. I have to say, Jonathan, one of the things that came to my mind as I'm listening to this, and as we are talking here about this day that's coming up on the 14th of February 2019. I don't know if you've seen the movie or not, and you might think and some people who may have seen this film saying, that has nothing to do with what you're talking about. But in actuality, it does. You seen the movie Bird in the Box? Bird Box? With Sandra Bullock?
No.
Fascinating film. I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it. But certainly people have heard the news stories about other people who are doing the Bird Box Challenge, and YouTube
Bird
is great.
Box. Yeah, Bird Box?
I believe that's what it's called.
Okay.
And there's this challenge where people blindfold themselves, because blindfolding yourself in the movie, it's a focal point.
Yeah.
And they're trying to do stuff like, oh, I don't know, driving a car. And I'm sorry, those are a bunch of idiots. Because don't do that, you know? You don't let the blind drive, so why are you trying to drive a car with a blindfold on? I don't understand that. In any event, what came to mind was that in the film, you have to blindfold yourself because there's something out there that if you see it, it will drive you to self-destruction or the destruction of others around you. And I'm listening to Chakra Dance, and I listen to a lot of other stuff as well, and I think, you know, there's a certain element of that in all other information outlets, if you will. That's how I want to phrase it. That kind of makes you feel the kind of the same way. So if you, instead of doing that, you either plug your ears or turn up the volume on something like that. Maybe you could counter the effects thereof.
Well, can I just suggest a couple of really interesting things?
Yes.
Number one, I often suggest, not always, because, you know, but often suggest if somebody's doing a sonic exercise, if it's possible to close your eyes, it really does amplify, number one, the power of the sound.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, this is so interesting because I just recently did a show on another station on World Sound Healing Day, but I talked about a new book that I had written with my wife that's gotten a lot of attention called The Humming Effect.
Mm-hmm.
And this person sent me an article from some sort of yoga magazine, but it basically, the reason she sent it to me was that in we talk about the, if you like, effects of doing self-created sounds, particularly the hum, and how it does things like increases levels of melatonin and increases levels of nitric oxide, and through a process particularly that's very, the headline was something like nitric oxide 15 times more powerful with Brahmari Pranayama. Now you say, what is Brahmari Pranayama? It's simply doing breathing while you're humming, but here's the key. You block your ears.
Mm.
And so the sound is really internal. And I will tell you, Richard, it was really the strangest thing. But some time ago, last year, my wife Andy and I were teaching in a place called Yogaville, which is a great name. I'll honor it because it was founded by Swami Satchidananda, who is the basically the guru who 50 years ago began the Woodstock celebration by having everybody chant together.
Mm.
But anyway, we were down there teaching some really highly elevated people various aspects of sound. And one of the things we did was we taught Brahmari Pranayama. And one of the people who was quite an advanced yogi had never done it before, and they literally freaked from the sound because it was almost so powerful, because it really, they were left with nothing but the sound of their own voice in the void. It was almost too much for them to handle. Very interesting what you just said about, like, you know, closing your eyes or closing your ears and blocking stuff off. I guess on a level, there's also an aspect, because you're talking about wearing blindfolds. One of the major things about meditation, for want of a better term, is to try to quiet what they call the monkey mind, which
yes.
is that inner chatter that's going on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the most powerful ways of doing that is through sound, and particularly through self-created sound.
Yeah, yeah. No, I couldn't agree with you more. As a matter of fact, I was just thinking about what you were just saying in terms of blocking off your ears and humming.
Yeah.
And the thought has occurred to me that, well, when you do that, it is now going to resonate inside your head.
Yeah.
Inside your head. One of the other tricks that I've done, and this was years ago with my buddy, we used to go after hours into a local radio station that I was working for, and we would basically get a bunch of record albums together, and I had a lot of some of the commercials I had done in my broadcast school days, and then he brought in maybe the New Times or something like this, and we just played radio, and we had a blast. I had a reel-to-reel that was rolling and recording this. I've actually found the radio shows that we did back then, and I have to say, I've listened to them and going, wow, that sounds pretty good for a guy who'd only been in broadcasting for about a year or two. Near the end of each of our sessions, we were getting tired and everything, and of course, a couple of the programs were right around Christmas. So we started singing. I started singing Christmas carols, but I kicked the machine into tape mode and brought it up on the console to create reverb or echo.
Oh yeah!
And I started playing with that, and it would reverberate in the headphones and all this kind of stuff. And then we would talk back and forth to each other with that going, and it was just something about that was so cool. And then when I started working on the computer and using audio editing software and finding those kinds of effects, I'm like, wow,
right.
This is just like going back to those days. It was so much fun. But there was something about it that just, you know, that particular effect just had such a great resonance.
Well, I think one of the things, okay, and I'm going to get scientific for a second, but it's great. You brought that up, is the fact that there are two ways that sound can literally affect us. One of them is called psychoacoustics, which is a sound going into our ears, into our brain, affecting our heart rate, respiration, our brain waves. And the other is called vibroacoustics, and that's where the sound goes into our body, affects us on a physical level, affecting our cells, our molecules, our DNA. And when you work with a hum, both of those occur. But that's, you know, talking about the echo effect, one of the things that happens when you have this echo is that it works on a psychoacoustic effect to really almost create a psychotropic experience for your brain. It's all of a sudden going to put your brain, like there's a delay, and all of a sudden you're going, what's going on? And, for most people, heavy-duty echo, particularly of their own voice, can really put them into an altered state of consciousness. And I think that's what was happening with you, and still does.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and it was so fascinating. And I go back, like I said, I listen to those things, and it is rather astounding what we were doing. But it was, I think that the biggest astonishment for me, and this was all in a good way, was just how light and fun and energetic we were. Not to say that we were probably not hopped up on soda and all of that stuff that we brought into the studio there, but there was just something about it. There was just something that made it so special, and we just had so much fun with it. And I mean, there are times when I wish I could go back to those days because it was so cool. But those days are gone. But at the same time, you know, we now create new days. And
the consciousness that you have that created that now create new stuff. So it's I'm totally in agreement with you.
Yeah.
I do want to point out, though, that the ancients, shall we say, who built these sacred temples and sacred churches, they knew about, whether you want to call it psychoacoustics or the effect of echoes and changing the sound, because you make sounds in these churches and you go, I can't do it unless I were to take an echo machine, plug it in, and all of a sudden do it, and all of a sudden people would go, whoa, that sounds incredible, because you can just take a regular sound and all of a sudden amplify it, change its timbre a little bit, and add some echoes, and all of a sudden it sounds like the voice of the divine. And so they knew about something about this. Otherwise, they wouldn't have built these temples and churches and whatnot to have that ability. It wasn't by accident.
No, it was not. And there's also a place in Ireland. My wife and I went on the east coast. It's just off the east coast. It's called Newgrange. And there they have these these prehistoric mounds. They uncovered them, and inside are these incredible chambers. Now, this one in particular has an east. Would be east facing, east facing entrance, and that on the winter solstice, the sun comes straight in the doorway and illuminates the interior for a few moments and illuminates the interior of the chamber. Now, at the time that we went, they would not allow you to take photographs or recordings of the interior out of respect for the ancient ones, as they phrased it.
Nice.
And when I was in that space inside, we were below the ground, probably 5, 6, 7 feet. You could still see out because you could see the light from the sky through the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
But the acoustics inside that chamber were like perfect. There was no echo, but it wasn't dead. You know, like if you put too much soundproofing in a room. And the sound doesn't go anywhere. And that's the best way that I can describe it. If there's such thing as perfect acoustics, the balance between dead and reverberation in the room, that's where it was, in that balanced spot. And it just felt so, so cool. Now they allow people to go in there and they can video. You know, obviously everybody's got these cameras and so forth.
Right. You can't stop it.
But it's like, like you just said, the people who built these cathedrals with that wonderful ambiance, if you will, hey, the prehistoric people, they must have known something. They got it from somewhere to create that kind of interior quiet. I mean, that's another way maybe to describe it. It had that quietness to where you could go in there and probably meditate and, wow, just really travel, if you will.
Well, I mean, the whole concept of traveling on sound and inner traveling is actually, a lot of people don't know about this, but is indeed an aspect of one of the great yoga paths. Is called Shabda Yoga, which is a sound current yoga. And it's oftentimes, you know, there's mantric yoga where you basically repeat a sound, and then there's Shabda Yoga, which is when you listen, and you do listening as a spiritual activity to basically travel on the sound, to go to higher planes of consciousness. And it's actually a really lifelong studied path, and it's you know quite wonderful. So that's why, for example, you know, when you're doing that Brahmari Pranayama and you're plugging your ears and you're listening to your own voice, for some people, boy, it was for that lady really life-changing, because I guess she'd never heard her voice so powerfully, and it did freak her out. But mm-hmm. then, you know, after that, I'm sure she's probably you know, plugging her ears and humming every day now, along with her other yogic activities. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, I find it interesting also, so many of these new, as they call them, yoga, hot yoga and goat yoga and so forth, you know. But I think that the aspect of, you know, humming yoga, if you will, I think would be a wonderful addition to somebody's repertoire. And it's quite remarkable what we just stumble into. Let's talk a little bit about the health aspects, not only just the healing of the planet. As I've shared on this program, probably even with you on this program, because you've been on the program a few times, when I was a kid, I was laying in bed. I don't know if it was the flu or what it was, and I was sitting there moaning and carrying on like that. And one of my sisters and my mother came in, and my sister says, "Mom, make him stop. He sounds terrible." To which she said, "No, that's how he heals himself." I mean, I didn't think
really?
Of it. I didn't think about it at the time. It's just what I did. Huh, well, I would moan, and the tones were never the same, you know? And I still do that today, although I can't remember the last time I was sick enough to where I needed that, you know?
Well, I mean, it's so interesting, because that technically is called toning, T-O-N-I-N-G.
Mm-hmm.
If you Google toning, you get people working out with, tone your body.
Right.
But really, this was basically before that term, and it became popular for use with, physical development. There was a woman named Laura Elizabeth Keyes in the 1970s who actually wrote a book called Toning, and it's basically using the voice as a healing instrument. And we tone all the time. What happens? You know, moaning, groaning, making sound. Women who are giving birth will make sound, and it releases what they finally now have found. I mean, when I say finally now have found, is like, you know, people have been doing this instinctively, but they found that self-created sound releases endorphins, which are those wonderful self-created opiates that work as natural pain relievers. And I was actually interviewed by the New York Times probably about 15 years ago on this very question about what you're doing, of, you know, why, you know, what's happening when people moan and groan and make sound when they're in pain.
Mm.
And, you know, I said it's probably, you know, I came up with about three or four or five different possibilities. One of them, of course, was, you know, pain reduction, then just distraction, to the idea that if something is painful, it's usually, if you like, I will say metaphysical level, but also on a quantum physics level, it's vibrating out of ease or out of its normal healthy vibrations. And if you're able to use your own self-created sound, you might be able to get it to vibrate back into ease and back into harmony.
Yeah.
And this is one of the ways that sound can be used to heal. So what you're doing as a little kid, anybody who's listening, I bet you they could think back and go, whoa, what happens? You stub your toe and you're going to make a sound.
Yeah, exactly. Although I find it interesting, too, with kids, when they do that, they will make a sound for a very short period of time, then their attention is shifted and off they go onto something else, and which is, I wish we could do that as adults a little bit more. This is interesting stuff. I'll tell you, we need to take a break here. We're going to do that in just a moment. I want to actually take us out, if I can. We have another piece that we're wanting to have folks listen to. And I'm going to guess maybe we should go to Heart Sutra and listen to that as we go on out, as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story. New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and I ask you to stay with us because we'll be back with more. And as we take a brief break here between segments on Tell Me Your Story, we're talking with Jonathan Goldman. He is here to share with us about a very special event coming up on February 14th, 2019. It's a very special day. It's called World Sound Healing Day, and there's worldsoundhealingday.org. Jonathan, what's this day all about, and how can we participate?
Thank you, Richard. On February 14th, 2019, World Sound Healing Day occurs, and I ask that you and all listeners join thousands of meditators, peace activists, and sound healers throughout the planet as they project the heart sound, ah, filled with the intention of peace and love. At 12 noon, their local time, or whenever works best, and they help initiate a resonance of oneness and compassion on the earth with their conscious sounds and raise planetary vibrations. Together, we can manifest a global community that resonates in harmony and peace throughout our planet. So for more information on World Sound Healing Day, please visit worldsoundhealingday.org.
And of course, you were a part of one of our programs that will be heard on the 3rd of February, but also on the podcasts on Tell Me Your Story. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to World Sound Healing Day 2019.
Thank you, Richard.
Tell me your story.
And we thank you for rejoining us here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with Jonathan Goldman, and we are talking about a very special day that's coming up. We ask you to experience the power of sacred sound, the 17th annual World Sound Healing Day, Love Day, February 14th, 2019. And you can become a sonic co-creator along with us, because we want you to join us on that day so we can heal our planet, our water, and raise our consciousness. You know, Jonathan, that's one of the aspects I find probably, maybe within myself, I might be able to notice that I've done something that has helped me to raise my own personal consciousness, my own awareness, my own awakeness, if you will. I shared with you before this interview of an experience I had the day before our conversation here. And I caught myself in mid-conversation and I toned down, you know, and then extended a hug and apologies and an email of apologies and so forth. And I'd like to think that maybe I'm hoping that's the catalyst to where I won't go that down that road again. But, you know, it's possible I may end up doing that. But then again, the person I was communicating with was just so gracious. You know, we've been good friends for 11 years. And so there was no harm, no foul, which, you know, that's great. By the same token, nobody deserves to be in the presence of someone who's just kind of going off the rails a little bit and is frustrated with that, and has gotten caught up in hearing that stuff that you ought to be plugging your ears so you don't hear, you know?
Yes.
Raising the consciousness for others, though, boy, that's a tough one, because then we're talking here about, hey, free will. If there were people out there that want to rape and pillage and plunder the planet, who are we to say, no, you can't do that, you must stop, and we're going to prevent you from doing that, because they have free will too. And at the same time, it's like, but we want to make a better world for everybody, not just a select few. Everybody has the right not only to have choices. I mean, I was watching a program about people who are – this was a tough show for me to watch. People who are 600 pounds or more.
Oh, yes.
And they're trying to, they want to make a change. And two of the programs that we watched, the two people, they actually struggled through. Almost, one guy almost lost his marriage, but recovered and moved forward to become a better man, and so on and so on and so on. Another gal, it took her 9 months. The other, the first program I saw, the girl started right away. The woman started right away and began dropping and dropping and dropping, did the surgeries, this, that, and the other, and then was down just over 200 pounds, which is remarkable. I mean, it looked like a totally different person. But they still had the free will to choose, you know, okay, I'm here, but I don't want to do this. I really don't. I want to go home and so forth. And of course, the people, they acknowledge this person has free will, and you're here, you're not making the progress we think you should be making based upon our, you know, our experience, and you need to start making some changes. No, I want to go home, and so forth. You know, and sometimes it just takes people a while. How do you address that whole aspect of free will when wanting to raise the consciousness of the planet?
Richard, okay. Before, you were saying to me, just because we have the ability doesn't mean we should.
Mm-hmm.
It comes back to that question.
Ah.
Right? And let me ask you a question. Do you not agree that we are currently living in a environment where negative, if you like, rather than raising the consciousness, There are many different shows on various types of media designed to scare people, designed to lower their consciousness. And I mean, what's the difference between that and trying to raise it? I mean, yes, we have free will. We can be affected. We can turn something off. We can certainly not listen. It's very hard, though, when you're being exposed. Perhaps there are some leaders of certain countries who are espousing certain verbiage that might upset other people. And, you know, you want to stay tuned to what's going on and find out. And yet at the same time, you find yourself being distressed by it. What do you do about that?
It's a good question. And what I do, I mean, personally, I try to tune it out. I had multiple news apps on my phone and my tablet. And about a year ago, I deleted them all. I uninstalled them all. I said, I can't live like this. And I think the best way for me to describe what you have just described is to say that we live in a very toxic environment, not just as far as the pollution in the water and in the oceans and in the air and so forth, but the energy, it just seems like it's very toxic. So you're saying, okay, now here's the hard part for me. Again, the whole going back to that question of just because we can, does that mean we should? Okay, so that's what they're doing. That's the way, and I think of Michelle Obama's comment, you know, when they go low, right, we're going to go high.
Right, so we want to create a balance.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. We want to create a balance. And I want to also suggest to you that there are a whole lot of medical people, scientific people, and spiritual people who would have said that by deleting these news apps, you probably really assisted your nervous system in terms of diffusing the amount of cortisol and other stress-related hormones that you'd be creating, because most of the news we receive these days stresses us out. That's just where it's at. And, you know, if we can do something other than that, I mean, you know, we need to find out and be aware of what's going on, but at the same time, Lord, how many imbalances and illnesses that manifest on this planet don't have their origin initially in being in stress. It may be that simple and yet that important.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more on that. World, we're talking here, folks. If you're just joining us, you're late, but nonetheless, you're here. World Sound Healing Day, February 14th. It's going to be an all-day event, so to speak. I guess that's the best way to put it. And there is a website that folks can go to, and that is worldsoundhealingday.org. You can participate in healing our planet, our waters, and raise our consciousness. And it seems really monumental, Jonathan. It really does sometimes. But I'm going to guess that in your experience, it doesn't matter how monumental it is, it's going to be worth it.
Well, indeed. And what's really interesting, Richard, we were talking about Greg Braden before, who's a, you know, good friend of mine and, you know, yours, I'm sure. And, you know, he's come up with a certain amount of people, and it's exponentially small. And there's another lady by the name of Lynn McTaggart who's written a book mm-hmm. called The Power of Eight, where she talks about just small groups of people gathering together and basically sending prayers or sending healing to somebody. And there is, because of the quantum matrix effect, there is some sort of resonance that occurs. And I just want to suggest that in all the different traditions, there are stories of a very small amount of really enlightened beings who are on the planet helping, if you like, create balance, and, you know, with their light and their love and their goodness, they're creating balance with all the darkness that is being manifested by all the people who are into greed and whatnot, whether they are called the Sodakum or the Avatars or whatnot. Some say it's 36, some say it's 72. And then again, I think, boy, biblically, what if we had 144,000 people who were all at the same time, which is a big jump, of course, but what if we had that number of people who were able to somehow project positivity? What would happen? I know with Greg, the number, in order to make a slight difference, is about 8,000 people. It's the square root of 1% of the population. Mm. That's not a whole lot of people. So with World Sound Healing Day, and with other global meditations, and I really got to give thanks for the fact that there are all sorts of global prayers and meditations that are going on more and more, and we need them. We need them so much because, without standing on a soapbox, I think you will agree that our planet right now is at a tipping point.
Yeah.
We have the ability of really assisting and bringing ourselves to another place where we're in a state of survival, where we replenish ourselves, where we're kind and good to each other, or we have the opposite possibility, and I think we really need to avoid that happening.
Well, I know that having, of course, not just talked with Greg, but also others who talk about the so far five cycles of man that are about 5,225 years or something of that nature. And I can't remember how far into this sixth cycle, I believe this is the sixth, that we're in, is not real palatable to think. On the one hand, that we're gonna do it a sixth time, and then we're gonna have to come back again and do it all over again. And it seems as though, for whatever reason, we just refuse to learn from history, learn from some of the examples of the past. And whether you believe that there have been five subsequent existence of man that have obliterated themselves and then started over. Or if you just believe that this is the only lifetime there is, as you just stated, Jonathan, you know, we're in a world of hurt. And I think, wait a minute. I think about this. If we could, first of all, let's stop throwing all these plastics into the lakes and streams and rivers that then wash out into the ocean. Let's stop that. All right. Now, there are 7.6 billion people on the planet. If we would send all 7.6 billion people to all of the coastlines of the continents, with the exception of Antarctica, at least for now, you'd think we'd be able to clean it up without any problem. 7.6 billion, that's 15.2 billion hands, pairs, you know, hands, all right? 7.6 billion pairs to, you know, be 15.2 billion hands. Picking up all of this stuff around the coastlines, around the world, there are ways to recycle that stuff that we could get very creative with. But we need to get it off of the beaches and out of the waters, because otherwise, you like seafood, you like fish, you might want to forget about it, because you're going to be eating mostly plastic if we don't get a handle on this. And that's just one aspect of it.
That's just one, but I mean, Richard, just to interject for a second,
sure.
I don't want to call it an island. I probably want to get closer to calling it a continent that is composed of plastic floating in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, which is enormous and getting bigger every day.
Yeah.
I recently saw something on either Frontline or 60 Minutes or something like that showing where they went to some really, really remote part of the Pacific, really far away, and then they went underwater and there was plastic and garbage even in this pristine paradise. You go in the water and there's plastic there.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I'm in total agreement, and I think it's probably going to take another step further and go, okay, we got to, and I think also I've had, if you like, an understanding. You know, we are decimating life on this planet. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
You know, for want of a better term, it's the sixth extinction that you're talking about, and I was watching something on Nova about one of the previous ones, which was basically due to an asteroid hitting in Mexico, and they've actually traced down to where in Mexico this asteroid hit, how many billions of million, it was like 60 million years ago, and it basically wiped out the dinosaurs, et cetera, and allowed for mammalian life to take place, et cetera, et cetera. And I mean, maybe it's supposed to happen. That's the other question. Maybe it's supposed to happen, but yeah. I can't take part in it because it really saddens me too much.
Well, and I certainly can appreciate that. And I may have seen the same piece that you're talking about. I mean, there's this island that nobody lives on it. I mean, it's out there in the middle of the Pacific. Yeah, and it's really unfortunate. But it just seems to me like these excuses of, well, it's just too expensive. I mean, it's just going to cost so much. It's just, yeah, but you have no clue as to what it's going to cost if we don't. There is no amount of money that's going to fix this if we don't do it now. No amount of money. It'll be too late. We're on that tipping point. We're teetering right now, teetering and tottering. And eventually we're not going to be teetering and tottering. It's going to spill over to the other side and then forget about it. And I know there are people who really like a lot of these apocalyptic movies.
Right, for sure.
And I get so tired of them because it's the same thing. I mean, it's over and over again, and they never seem to learn, and it's always the same stuff. And what really gets me are the apocalyptic television series. It's like, really?
Sure.
Why are you going to carry this on for one or two or three or four seasons? Just make a miniseries, a movie, put it in the theaters and be done with it. Because, I think that's, again, feeding that mentality of fear, that consciousness of fear that you were talking about, that we need to get over. We need to get beyond that and move to a new level of awareness. You know, folks, you need to remember that we heal our planet and we heal ourselves. We heal ourselves and we heal our planet. And you can go to worldsoundhealingday.org to find out more, to participate on the 14th of February 2019. And it's on the 14th of every February each year, at least it has been. I wanted to ask you before we wrap up our program about your observations, Jonathan, as to how things have changed because of World Sound Healing Day over the last 16 cycles, if you were, the last 16 years, and here we are in year 17.
Oh, Richard, that's a really good question, of which I have no answer, because, boy, on the last one, there was some sort of really nasty happening in terms of a school or whatnot that occurred. And my only thought is, well, perhaps it would have been even nastier if we hadn't done this. So, you know, I can't say, but perhaps things would be even in worse situations if we didn't co-create World Sound Healing Day together, and if people didn't get together and somehow try to shift and change the consciousness through global meditations and global prayers, and they have definitely proven that when, you know, you have these global meditations and global prayers, there is, for the most part, a reduction in violence that occurs. Now, if there is violence that occurred, maybe it would have been multitudinously greater than did occur.
Yeah.
We don't know. I did want to get back. We have another second. And questioning, why are all these TV shows and movies about, you know, Armageddon and zombie apocalypse happening? And the question is this prescience? Are they trying to tell us that something's going on, or are they just feeding off of fear? I don't know, but yeah. I'd like to suggest that we can, as you said, with our with our light, our love, and our sound, we can make a difference. So we heal the planet, we heal ourselves, so we can. You know, I think that the idea is for us not to get too downhearted in terms of things are just in such a terrible shape, we can't do anything. No, we can, and we must.
Yeah. I know that during the 2016 campaign, and this is the way I put the label on it, I put the label on this particular cycle, we re-entered the time of victimhood.
Ah.
they did this to us. They did that to us. It's not our fault. It's their fault. On and on and on. And I thought, wait a minute, I thought we escaped this in the 80s, because I remember the 80s and self-help and psychology and of different personal growth programs that I went through. I went through LifeSpring, which was similar to EST back in the 80s. I went through Delta and Omega Vector in the 90s back in Phoenix, where we finally had transcended from, well, it's mom and dad's fault I am the way that I am, to beginning to take responsibility for where I am and who I am. And it's up to me. Doesn't matter who's to blame anymore. I now need to make the changes. And it's like, okay, here we are in 2015, 2016, and we're back to it's somebody else's fault. And I thought, what are we doing? You know, and so I'm hoping, I've heard that there are a certain level of millennials that are actually coming into this world. There's one aspect of the millennials that's rather interesting and, of course, frustrating to the economic system. They don't want to own. They'd rather rent.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm not a millennial, but I feel the same way. And bottom line is I've owned and I've rented. I'm still renting. And the bottom line is you have to pay something in it. You have to, there's an, it got to be an exchange for me to live inside of a dwelling. Whether I own it or rent it doesn't matter. I want a roof over my head so that when it does rain or snow, what have you, or get too hot, I can cuddle in there and have the temperatures the way I want them. And I think that you know, it has not been made a priority by the millennials. This is like they have a different attitude than previous generations that is befuddling, you know, the experts, economic experts.
That's really interesting, and boy, I would say also that there are a certain amount of millennials who, you know, being a child of the Woodstock Nation, I'll say that there are a certain amount of millennials who seem very self-absorbed, and you know, and that part of that may be due to, on a level, to the fact that the cell phone consciousness is such that rather than having a conversation with the person that's next to them, they'll be looking at some sort of social media type of thing. But then there are also millennials who really care. There are also millennials who are really aware of what's going on there. And there's a wonderful group of youngins, as I call them, called the Earth Guardians, that their, if you like, leader is kind of, he's probably about 17 now, and he's almost like the Mick Jagger of the millennials, and he has got a best-selling book out, and he's quite high consciousness, and his grandfather, who's 85 years old and a dear friend of mine, started the oldest intentional community here in the United States, called Hummingbird, down in New Mexico. And so once again, it's balance. It's balance.
Yeah.
Not all bad, not all good. But if we can just somehow, at this tipping point, somehow avoid going into the chasm.
Yeah. Absolutely. Sound forth with an ah tone for 5 minutes at noon in your local time zone for this event. Spread the word. Organize others to join you and create tones, groups, concerts, and other celebratory activities in order to bathe the earth in a field of light and love through sound throughout the day. We encourage you to do that and be a participant in World Sound Healing Day, and we encourage you to go to worldsoundhealingday.org. Jonathan Goldman, I thank you so much for sharing this time, sharing this information with our listeners, and we certainly encourage people to go to that website, which again is worldsoundhealingday.org, to find out more and participate at noon on the 14th of February 2019 with an ah for 5 minutes. Just, you know, doesn't have to be loud. just has to be an awe. Just it can be soft, you know. But if you can do it loud, maybe in a park and get a bunch of people together, so much the better. That would be wonderful. But thanks so much for sharing this with us, and we do hope, I was going to say, and I wish you much success in the event, but I don't wish you much success. What I do wish is that we do find that balance.
Nice. And Robin, wish me, I want you to thank me for such success, because they found that if you are grateful and an appreciation, acting as though something has already happened, then it will have happened. So I thank me, I thank you, I thank everybody who's helped co-create this event on February 14th. And Richard, I want to thank you for allowing me to tell you my story.
Absolutely. We're going to close out the program today with this final piece, and it's called The Lost Chord. Before we play it, though, and wrap up the program, tell us about The Lost Chord.
Well, I think that the songs that you're hearing are all designed to activate the energy of the heart center and activate the energy of love. And this one is a combination of there are literally about 60 different sacred sounds that are interwoven on this thing using special frequencies, special ratios, as well as the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum and the mantra Om Tara Tu Tara Tare Svaha, this is the Tibetan, if you like, energy link with the heart center and activating compassion. I think that this is probably called something like, this track is called something like Call of Compassion.
We're going to wrap the program up with this, Call to Compassion, The Lost Chord. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Please participate in World Sound Healing Day coming up February 14th, 2019, noon. In your office, in your home, in your car, in the park, wherever, put out an for 5 minutes. And stay with us here as we go out with this beautiful piece here. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Until next time, love, Talal.